Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in. You are listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I am your host, Corey Fleck, and I am happy to report that we will be, well, talking about a wide range of markets because it sure seems like there's a lot of liquidity still sloshing around the financial world. I want to wish, first and foremost, everyone in Canada a happy Canada Day, and coming up July 4th for everyone down in the U.S. I am kicking off this show with Rick Bensignor, the founder and editor of Bensignor Investment Strategies. And Rick, I want to throw kind of a general question your way that deals with where's the risk, where's the reward when we look at financial markets where we have U.S. equity markets close to all-time highs, bonds, those are at levels that we haven't seen in multiple years. You look at something like TLT, and that's close to breaking out. And we also have gold at a six-year high. We're seeing money come into risk on, risk off. Where do you see the risk and reward? Let's start off with U.S. markets.
All right, Corey. Well, thanks for having me on again. For U.S. markets, I still think there's upside to the equity market. Our S&P target is 30.32, and that's not a sell-all level. It's just kind of the next target that we think once we stop playing with this now triple high area and in around 29.50 in the S&P, we'll kind of quickly skirt higher to over 3,000. At 30.32, I probably take some exposure off, but that's, you know, look, from where we are now at 29.40 or so, it's still almost 100 points, 3%. It's not huge, but I'm still willing to. Just a week ago, we told institutional players to up U.S. equity exposure again, and so I'm willing to lay out odds that, you know, 2-to-1 odds that the market continues higher than gets down under, let's say, the 27.25 level, which is where we've had a double bottom so far this year.
So, Rick, let me jump in here quickly, because if you're trying to play for, say, that 3% move to that 30-32 level, does that mean that this bull market is getting a little long in the tooth, having such a short near-term target?
Well, it's a near-term target for, look, I deal with lots of hedge funds, and 3% is actually a lot to them. So, you know, we try to tactically play the moves that we see and what's the likely course of action in whatever the next move is. And I'll still say the next move is likely higher than lower. But 30.32 is a tactical target. It's not a strategic target. I'd put a strategic target something probably in the 3,100, the upper 31 handle, maybe close to 3,200. And up there, then I probably start thinking that we're long in the tooth. But as most people know, and look, I am a market timer. I do what is said can't be done, which is time the market. And the reality is that as good as I am at doing this, and as good as there are some people who can do this, it's still a very difficult game. The thing that I think you have to that investors should remember, and especially individual investors, is that even though you're generally long equities, you can get out or at least hedge your position very quickly these days with lots of different instruments. So it doesn't. You shouldn't have to think of this like, well, I've got to sell out 30 different names. You know, if I think this is kind of the end of the bull market, I got to sell out 30 names. Well, no, you don't. You know, you could short spiders for a certain percentage of your portfolio. You could buy the ETF instead of shorting spiders if you don't want to short. You buy the ETF with the ticker symbol SH. That's an ETF that when you buy that, you are short the S&P. So, you know, and you can do any dollar size you want because these are very liquid. So let's assume the average person doesn't have a futures account. He's not going to short S&Ps in the futures markets. But you can still hedge your exposure very quickly in the market that if something goes wrong, you can get that that locked in hedge very quickly. So even though here on the institutional side, I'm saying, you know, we still have another 3% before the next level to contend with, it's I'm basically saying you don't have to be worried until and unless we got under, let's see, one round numbers, 2,700, 27 and a quarter, because we've sold off twice. We've made it abundantly clear to our clients, both individual investor clients through inthenotrader.com, and also to my institutional clients, that the December low, which so many people called as a bear market and sell the rally off of there, we have been so clear that that not only did not initiate a bear market, but that it was the bottom for all major global equity indices. And we told them that before mid-January, so that, you know, we still able to capture hundreds, the bulk of the rally this year. And again, I think there's more to come. So, you know, if you're an individual investor and you're saying, is this, it's a 10-year-old bull market, you know, we have a triple top kind of near 2950, I'm not comfortable adding exposure. That's fine. I get that. But it doesn't mean you should be selling out either. And there's nothing wrong with holding your longs and, you know, picking a certain level that if we break down underneath, you want to hedge your book. And there's very easy ways to do that. So, you know, from here, we're talking a little over 200 S&P points. And, you know, in the scheme of things, I think that's not a heck of a lot to have to risk in order to just get comfortable in staying with, at least stay with what you got. If you're not comfortable putting more money in, at least stay with what you got.
Okay. Hey, that's pretty straightforward. I appreciate those comments there, Rick. Can I also just get a quick comment regarding, you mentioned that you time the market, and I know a lot of timing the market does involve reading charts, but what are some of the key factors outside of the charts that you're paying the most attention to?
Well, when I do look at shorts, Corey, I look at them in a way that most people don't. I don't use standard technical analysis to help make my decisions. I use other models that are more geared for timing. And the other element that I'm really good at bringing into this picture is bringing the whole concept of behavioral finance theory, which I know very well, I was the first to have taught it at NYU, is taking the concepts of bad decision making that human beings do, and which of course includes portfolio managers, and exploiting their ill-timed decisions to take advantage of that. So a lot of what I look at in the charts is beyond RSIs and MACDs and, you know, stochastics and moving averages, that kind of is more common. And I have access to models that I pay for, and they're, you know, they're not inexpensive, that institutions use to better time the likelihood that you have an exhaustion of trend. And that's how I've been able to buy stuff kind of close to lows and sell stuff sometimes, you know, very close to their real turning point, at the high. And the an example I often give people is if you watch a stock go from 50 to, let's say, $100 a share, it pulls back to 80, rallies to the upper 90s, and then pulls back under 80, people will say, hey, double top near 100. We've pulled back through the lowest low in between those two peaks. Time to get out. That's a real double top. And that would likely be correct, except by the time you sell, you've now sold 20% off of the high. If you don't get out until you've seen a 20% move down, and let's say you don't get in after a low has been made until you're comfortable enough that it's actually the low and you lose 20% there, you've probably, you know, you've given up, let's just say, 60% to 70% of the, or better said, 30% to 40% of the move in either direction, you've missed just by simply waiting for confirmation. The models I use get me much closer to selling near the real peaks or buying near the real bottoms. And again, you know, these are not everyday models; they're not easily accessible. They cost a fair clip of money, but that's how I can put up the numbers like I do. And through June 15th. this year. We'll get, you know, now that the market's closed, I'll update again this weekend for the official first six months of the year. But, you know, my institutional newsletter is up 52.9% year to date as of June 15th, simply because we know how to time markets, and we play all markets globally. It's, you know, if I see something in Japan, I'll play it in Japan. It doesn't matter to me. It's where I can find opportunity.
Hey, that's a great return so far just through this year. And yeah. In all fairness, I remember chatting with you at the tail end of last year, and you did come on the show and say, this is looking like a bottom for global markets. And we have seen a strong rebound from there. Now, let's also look at the Treasury market. TLT is close to breaking out, as I mentioned. We have the 10-year right around 2%. How are you playing this market?
So over the last month or so, I've told clients that anywhere from about 2.15% down to 2.05%, I'm very content pulling in some profits of having been long bonds. And I can live with probably yields getting down to as low as about 195, which is only 5 basis points away. So it's really not far away, because we closed exactly at 2% today. And still think it's within the context of where bonds can make a short-term top. I think there's a decent chance that sometime over the summer we get up to 223. It's not a huge move. It's, you know, about 0.25% from where we are, but that would be my first kind of target on the upside for a bounce in yields. And as I say, I don't really want to see it get much lower than 195. If it gets lower than 195, I'll have to dig more into trying to exactly figure out where, you know, a downside target would be that's not essentially the lows somewhere in and around 1.4%. There's probably somewhere in between, but there's not a heck of a lot on the charts in between the double bottom we made between 2012 and 2016, just about 1.4%, and where we are now at 2%.
So might we be going down to that level?
Might we be? It's possible. I didn't expect us to get much below 2%. So if we did that, I would say that was not within the realm of what I expected at all. But when you look at the global interest rate picture and how many countries actually charge you money to put money in the bank instead of pay you money to put money in the bank, you know, essentially negative interest rates, the U.S. is the one place that you actually do get yield on a high-quality piece of paper that you know you're going to get paid back. And that keeps driving buyers to this market and pushing yields lower because everywhere else you can't get it. Now, a lot of that is the currency differential, but it's not 100% the currency differential. And there's more and more people saying that, you know, receiving interest on your money is really a thing of the past. And whether the U.S. goes to zero or not is not important, and more to the thought of rates are going to, it's just kind of the new way the world works, and that you don't get a return in the market as far as yield. But that does mean you could still theoretically, if you still have a bull market in bonds, and of course they move opposite to interest rates. So as interest rates go down, the price of bonds go up. So bonds you own are making money. Bonds you would purchase would make money if the bull market continued and we see this lower interest rate scenario. The problem becomes when those bonds come to expiration, and then you have to reinvest at very low rates. But I think this is still part of a long-term bottoming type formation for yields. And, you know, right here, 2%, I'm really not doing much other than, again, being happy to take some off the table. If I've sold too early, that's okay. That's not the worst thing in the world. But I don't really want to see yields get much lower and still think that there's some chance that they're close to a top.
Let's also switch focus here to gold. Gold is at a 6-year high. It finally broke out from that about 1350 to 1380, whatever level you want to use, resistance, and it held there into the end of the month, and it was a strong month. Gold moved over $100 this month, finally started to see some volatility and some excitement here. What are your thoughts on the gold market?
So in general, I'm a fan of gold. We've been long gold since 1295 for institutional clients. And we put that out as more of, as an investment idea than as a trade. Most trades, you know, if you make anywhere from, I would say, $20 to $50 in gold, that's a good trade. But this, we told people buy a 1295 and buy a 1235 if it got there. It didn't get to 1235, so we only have a half of an investment position on. But we were correct in the sense that that range was most likely going to be the bottom for gold, and then it broke out to the upside. 1428 is an upside tactical target that we hit this week. So I suggested to some, if you're long gold from a trading position, you want to take some off at 1428. And we blew through it. The one day we made the high up to, I think it was 1442 or so is the high of the move. And then 2 days this week, the high in August futures were a tick under 1428. So that certainly has been the correct level. We closed out at about 1413 or so. On a pullback, I think gold doesn't get less than probably 1350, 1360 if you even get that opportunity. There's no reason to think it should. And from a bigger point of view, where could gold go? Well, I'm probably going to lift my the investment trade, or let's just say the investment, from 1295, my target is 1487, I think it is. And it doesn't mean gold can't go higher than there, but at that point, I've got almost $200 on the trade, and that's, I consider that a very good play. I see no reason why gold is, if we're prognosticating about its future, do I see it taking out the high at 1920? I don't now. I don't know what would make us do that. You'd need, I think, certainly full recession, which I think even if we get some recessionary whiffs in the next year or 2 years, I don't think it becomes a really bad one. So I don't see gold getting up there. Could gold get into the $1,500 or $1,600 range? Sure, it's possible. And look, I won't trade cryptocurrencies, but if you look at what Bitcoin's done, and has moved from, $3,500 to as high as $14,000 this year before pulling back a little bit over the last couple of days. There's some message there that there is concern over fiat currency, and that whether it's Bitcoin or gold, you want to be in some other format of a currency versus the actual currencies themselves. So again, I won't trade Bitcoin, but there's a message in what Bitcoin's doing, and that just helps solidify why I kind of want to keep a bullish stance in gold and still look to buy pullbacks.
Yeah, that's fair. One more just quick comment. I just am curious how you read a chart like gold where it did go sideways for 5 to 6 years. Some people call this a U-shaped bottom, and mm-hmm. that argument has been made that that leads to a longer running bull market on the other end. What do you think?
I don't disagree with that. When you have a multi-year U-shaped base like this has, and then starts breaking out to the upside, go back to a very basic thought that I think most people don't think of in the day-to-day way of looking at markets. If you buy something, whatever the market is, whatever the product is, there's somebody on the other side of that trade. Otherwise, you couldn't have bought because you need a seller. So if you're talking about building a base and a commodity over 5 years, that also means for 5 years you've had sellers. Now, some of those are just people selling out of prior longs, whether they were long lower or long higher, and some of those are speculative shorts. And when you have 5 years worth of shorts that start getting squeezed, that's how a market can rip to the upside, like we've seen recently in gold. So it will have some pauses along the way. But think of it this way. You've got 5 years worth of sellers who are wrong. Now, not everyone has to get out of being wrong because they could just be flat and they'll miss the upside. But the shorts at some point have to get out. Shorts unwinding just create buyers. And the more you go up, the more shorts will be forced to pay and say, get me out at any price. So they just start lifting at the market. They don't care. The pain gets great enough that they say, just buy any price. I don't care. Get me out. And I think that's, now you start looking at a gold chart and you see why 1350-ish somewhere. Even if we got down to 1325, you wouldn't expect it to get a heck of a lot lower than that, because that's kind of the top end of the range. You were saying 1350 to 1380 is where all the highs have been. Well, now we've kind of blown through that. So that means every single seller has been wrong. If you look at a chart now, you have to go back to 2013, the last time gold was trading at where we're trading now. So that's 6 years of people who have bad bets on. And that's also why, if you think of the basic thing in like technical analysis textbooks, that what used to be resistance turns into support. Yeah, so if all the highs were between 1350 and 1380 and you finally blow through them, then you know there's going to be a lot of buyers trying to buy the pullback, and they're going to tend to buy where it broke out from. So I look at the gold chart. I like it. And like I said, you know, tactically, we should stall in here a bit, but I'm a buyer and a pullback.
All right. Well, hey, it's great having you on the show here, Rick. And I enjoy hearing all of these targets that you have for these markets. And that is encouraging for, I think, the gold bulls, finally this breakout happening. Everybody, stick around. I'm going to be right back with Mark Chandler. Rick, have a great rest of your weekend.
You too, Corey. Thanks for having me.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.